I'm going to call to order the meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District for Wednesday, February 17, 2016. Would you all please stand and rise with us for first a moment of silence for Justice Antoine Scalia and other men and women in the armed services who've sacrificed for our freedoms and liberties? Gentlemen, you're ready. Roll call, please.
Director Lucy?
Present.
Director Hill?
Here.
Chairman Schultz?
Here. Thank you, John. We're going to move on to public comments tonight. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the board on any item within the jurisdiction of this board. Please bear in mind the board will listen to comments. We cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda, so this is your opportunity to speak on any item that is not on this agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the board?
I would again like to ask that we place on the agenda the benefit package that all employees of the sanitation district get, that for those who don't know, it is 100% when they retire. It is not a sustainable amount in benefits. And I'm again going to ask that put this on a near future agenda at this point so it can be discussed. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'm kind of bringing up something that I brought up a couple of months ago, and I'm afraid that it may have fallen through the cracks, or maybe it's going to be addressed in the bylaw discussion that's supposed to be happening every February. We were late last year. Perhaps we'll see it in early March. Mr. Schultz, you appointed or nominated and your board elected Matthew Guerrero to serve as vice chair of this district, and he's technically the alternate from Oceano, and I think you were asking legal counsel to follow up on how that appointment or that seat works when, say, you are absent and Mary Lucy is here. She's not the vice chair. Who would then preside over the meeting? So I don't know if we'll see that in the near term, but I hope we do. And something that kind of there's something awry, something strange in that. The health and safety code, and forgive me, I don't have the citation tonight, but it was the presiding officer of each of your member agencies is supposed to be who's seated at the dais, who serves on the district board. And you actually spent $1,200 for a legal opinion from Best, Best, and Krieger to say that that wasn't necessary and that it would be certainly okay if someone else, not the presiding officer, served for the sanitation district from those member agencies. So now I'm even more confused. Ms. Lucy is the appointee because of the health and safety code. That was what was said at her district. But Mr. Guerrero, it has been the primary point person and now is the vice chair of this board. And I think that all needs to be fleshed out and, you know, some resolve from that. With regard to alternates, in light of the Knudsen report, this is awkward, but Barbara Nichols is married to a primary person that's called out in that report. And I honestly have to say, I don't think she would be a suitable alternate from Grover Beach, and I'd like you to reconsider that alternate appointee. And those were my comments for public comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anyone else?
Debbie Peterson. I live in Grover Beach, and I wanted to read to you California Government Code 6255A and B. The agency shall justify withholding any record by demonstrating that the record in question is exempt under express provisions of this chapter, or that on the facts of the particular case, the public interest served by not disclosing the record clearly outweighs the public interest served by disclosure of the record. A response to a written request for inspection or copies of records that includes a determination that the request is denied in whole or in part shall be in writing. Now, this is relating to public records requests. I think, however, the same could be applied to the Knudsen report. I know we're all tired of hearing about it at this point. However, there were at least two items in the report that were redacted that are actually public record. And I would like to ask that, for the benefit of the public, that those be put back in, unredacted. And I'd like to ask that all of the redactions, that there be, that the code that justifies the redaction would be cited. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
My name is Frank Laversky. I live in Arroyo Grande. And I want to discuss the proposed wastewater rate increase.
Mr. Labreski,
are we too early for that?
Yeah, we're going to get to that right after.
All right.
I believe that's next on our agenda. So don't go very far. Or it's close. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, board and staff. I just wanted to read a little bit from the Knudsen report, which Mr. Knudsen didn't have a chance to go into. And in response to Mr. Wallace's presentation at the last meeting, where he indicated that all of the bills were available for people to, all the invoices were available for the board and staff to look at the time of the meeting. This is from Mr. Knudsen's report. The county's role in the financial operation of the district is limited to maintaining the cash balances and processing vendor payments. County staff reviews the payment requests for two signatures. Vendor invoices are not attached to the payment request. Therefore, the county does not review the district's invoices or reconcile payments with the district's budget. The district's payroll is handled by an outside firm and is not entered into. But I just think that this kind of flies in the face of Mr. Wallace's claims that all the invoices were available, everything was fine. It clearly wasn't so. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this public communications, bring it back. And I think the only thing that I want to, I think Ms. Tacker had asked a question and brought up the bylaws, and I believe we have talked about revisiting the bylaws. Is that correct, Mr. Clemens?
Yes, sir. We expect to have them on the next agenda.
And I think that's one of the items that we'll more than likely be discussing in that discussion, correct? Okay, very good. So we're going to move on to our consent agenda tonight. And this is an agenda where we consider items as a group. And I want to see if any members of the board want to pull any items from consent. No? Do any members of the public want to speak to any item under consent?
Julie Tacker again, and I'd like to speak to the legal bills. I'd like to see an end to Downey Brand, and that's this time is $2,826.81. I'd like to better understand how we are working with Trujillo and Stockton, and that their bills are separate and not a firm that's billing together. And then because they're kind of pulled apart, $7,297 for Mr. Trujillo, $6,352 for Ms. Stockton, and as I recall, last month they were also very high. And I guess I just want to understand, or I want to be assured, that you're not paying each attorney to do the same work at any point. And if one is learning, or there's a learning curve, that you're not having to pay both of them their full hourly rate to learn, because they came to you as a team, and that information should be shared as a team, and they should bill for 1 hour, not two. And then there's this curious LexisNexis charge for $250. If your attorneys, that goes in their bill. That's somewhere, I mean, if your attorneys are using LexisNexis, I don't know why that bill comes to the district. That's their bill to learn. And if they have to pass it through to you, then I would think it'd be part of their invoice and not the district being separately invoiced. It's just curious. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else?
Speaking on the attorney bills that we still have not gotten a handle on and are just getting outrageous, and we're now looking at another lawsuit possibly. To bring up the Knudsen report, it looked as if we were paying the attorneys to redact the information in the Knudsen report, when I believe staff had a very good handle on that, and I'm wondering, why are we letting attorneys do some of the work that I feel staff could do? And I really would like an answer to that at some point, because some of this just seems common sense to get some of these bills in hand. And as a ratepayer, and somebody who's getting ready to have their rates go up, I'd like to see us get a handle on this. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public, bring it back to the board. Any questions from board members? Mary, you have anything? Jim?
It is unusual in my experience to see a LexisNexis billed directly to the district, but I imagine that was a legitimate charge, which is why I didn't have a question about it.
Okay, Mary.
I'm looking at the warrants, and are we commingling or just adding expenditures and revenue in together? Because I'm not quite sure what Apollo Wine, unless it's dumping, and then that would be revenue, not an expenditure. So if I could just have an explanation to that.
Very good. John?
When our Brian accounts sign on, we ask them to post a $10,000 bond. And Opelo honored that, and now they're not using our Brian services anymore. So when they gave us the $10,000, we deposited in our account. Now we're paying them, returning their bond deposit.
And Ready Fresh?
Those are rentals, equipment rentals.
Rain for Rent?
Yes.
Equipment rental? 8,100?
The rent, or Ready Fresh or Rain for Rent? Oh, I see. Okay. So that is an equipment rental. Anything else? Okay. And I did want to maybe not belabor the point. It is our understanding that Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton are not repeating similar duties. And I don't know if Ms. Stockton would like to provide more information, but it's my understanding that a lot of the the amount of time they spent this time was working with the Knutson reporter, Mr. Knutson, to try and get the document ready so that we could present it to the public. I believe that was a large chunk of the time that was spent. Is that correct, Ms. Stockton?
That's correct. We did work on the Knutson report, and I was primarily responsible for the Knutson report.
Okay.
And that would show on my bill.
Very good. And I would think just to emphasize that reviewing this document, there certainly has always been, as we talked about before, a potential litigation, and I think that is something that legal counsel is paid to do. It's not something that the staff would be equipped to do, at least in my humble opinion. So I don't know if anyone up here has a different view, but it is something that the attorneys have looked at in trying to be as transparent as possible, but protect not just the district, but individuals that may have been put in that document. So I hope I haven't said too much, but I did want to clarify that for folks.
Mr. Chair, that's perfect and exactly correct.
Okay, very good. So I think with that, what's the board member's pleasure? And this is on the consent item. We didn't pull any, so we've got items 4A and 4B.
I would move approval of the consent agenda.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. And let's say if there's no additional discussion on this item, let's do roll call, John.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. Motion carries. So let's move on to our plant superintendent's report. This is item number 5. Mr. Clemens, you have the floor.
Good evening, Chairman Schultz and board members. Looking at our plant data and operations, our effluent numbers are really good. They're better than last year's average. Effluent BOD being 26 compared to 29 average for last year, and effluent suspended solids being a 31 compared to an average. So our plant processes are running well again. We know we got a little high in December on our suspended solids. We write that off to the weather. We're often running in our normal mode today. With regard to maintenance, we repaired loose wire and effluent pump controls, discovered non-working VFD on the number 2, that should be the number 2 effluent pump. Those are the pumps that pump out to the ocean when necessary. We traced and repaired a broken subsurface pipe near the number 1 digester, recorded amperage reading on all motors as part of our new electrical motor maintenance program, and performed a variety of work orders. What we have in progress is we're still working on a sewer bridge. We're still going through our regulatory and permitting issues with Fish and Game and trying to get okay to do the work. We're at the point where we're ready to do the work. We just need to make sure we're permitted and prepared in the right way. We're working with MKN. We're prepared, and we should be issuing our RFP for the grit removal system. We're preparing an RFP for mechanical bar screen, again, with MKN. Our secondary process redundancy project, I'll wait because that's coming up tonight. Mike Nunleo will be speaking on that, so we'll pick that up later. On our satellite water recovery resources facility, that's our what began as our satellite water plant, our recovery plant. And right now, if you'll remember, we're in a kind of a holding stage to figure out the best way to go with that study. Well, during part of our evaluation or investigation, we went over to PISMO and attended their kickoff meeting for their water resources recovery facility and to see if this district if we could work together with them on a regional approach to this resource recovery. And what we got out of that is PISMO wants to do what PISMO wants to do, and this district needs to do what we need to do. That being said, after that, I met with Ms. McGlish from Arroyo Grande and with our engineers, WSC, who are on this. And, you know, one of the issues is that if we had asked them about doing an off-site study, and the question became after that, if they're doing an off-site study already for PISMO, would it be worth it then for us to pay for them to do the same work for us? And that was the center of our discussion. During that discussion, WSC pointed out that the PISMO study is based on the PISMO flows and the PISMO water characteristics, and our study would be different, and it would actually cover different areas. So there is some reason to do a study of our own. However, there's some other options that we're going to bring to the board, one of them being another. Cannon's done a regional study on the whole county, so perhaps we bring them in and compare them to what WSC might do. In the meantime, in talking with Arroyo Grande, who's our partners in that project, we did ask WSC to go figure out a scope for a study for an off-site facility. We will be meeting with them on the 25th. So at our next board meeting, staff expects to bring back that scope of work. And, again, we'll check with a couple other engineering agencies and see what our possibilities are if we want to go forward with studying reclamation possibilities. We're also confirmed with PG&E regarding possible energy conservation projects, the main part of that being potentially another cogeneration unit. So it's a fun project. And we're preparing a short-term emergency backup plan in case of FFR failure. We're working with Gehring on that to be able to keep our trickling filter wet in the event that our rotating arms fail on us. Also, we attended, in miscellaneous kind of repeat of some of the information, we attended the Pismo Beach Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project kickoff meeting. We also attended a meeting with Dan Heimel of WESC and staff of AG. Staff also had our annual audiometric, our hearing test performed at the plant for our staff members. With that, that's the end of my report.
Great. Thank you, John. Jim, you have any questions?
With regard to the satellite water resource recovery facility, recognizing that the grant was for a scalping project, did we determine that the grant might cover just a secondary treatment process for recycling, or has that been ironed out, or are we still?
We've asked WSC to investigate that as part of the rescoping, if it's even possible that we could change over. So that answer should come on the 25th.
Okay. Thank you.
Any others? Mayor, you have any questions?
You had mentioned a few meetings ago that there was some concern about your FFR system, and I wanted to know if you had any updates on that. You were concerned that there was some problems with that.
The problem is, as I remember mentioning, is that it's 30 years old and it's never been down. We have, as part of our testing, we test the oil. It had been every 6 months, but we test it monthly. In our monthly test, we're getting a little water in the bearing box where the oil is, which is something that's not good, but it's not, at this point, it's not something urgent. If we keep our oil changed on a monthly basis, that should cover that. And we detected some fragments of iron in oil, but not at a level that triggered any alarms. It's just something we're keeping an eye on. So, you know, it's a 30-year piece of equipment that's never quit in 30 years, so we want to be cautious here.
But you wouldn't classify it as a crisis or anything, just to monitor it closely.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, John. Do any members of the public want to have any questions regarding the plant superintendent's report?
Julie Tacker again. And my only concern is the WSC rescoping, in that you have a not-to-exceed contract with WSC. Your warrant packet you just passed, there's $1,550 to a WSC, so they're burning that up, and, you know, where's it going to go? And with regard to the FFR, that's a fixed film reactor for those at home. You are preparing a short-term emergency backup plan, And that's what I'm really interested in, and, you know, what if it does fail, what steps will you take to divert the flow and find another way to treat that wastewater before it hits the ocean? I was taken aback by Ms. Lucy's question because that's what he just reported. And so just helping him underscore that there's a backup plan being prepared. And I think we'll all be interested in what that is.
Thank you for that comment. Anyone else?
Beatrice Spencer again. I just wanted to make one quick comment with regards to the superintendent's reports, which, thank goodness, are the one kind of calming, stable element in this whole sanitation district mess that we have. We've had recent change in legal counsel. We have a board of 1 year with a kind of rotating one director on and off. And yet the constant, steady leadership of Mr. Clemens and his team, as he always gives well-deserved credit to, is reassuring for those of us on this side of the podium that what's really necessary to be taken care of at the district is being handled regardless of all the other strife and just sometimes chaotic goings on. It's very nice to know that we have one person in charge who's leading the way and really watching out for the ratepayers. I am so impressed with his ability to, and I'm going to say use duct tape and baling wire to keep this thing going, because as 30-year-old equipment that's not meant to last 30 years, the fact that this is still operating and we haven't had more troubles than just that spill in 2010, and I don't think that was the plant's problem, that was someone else's problem, but Mr. Clemens and his team are to be highly commended, so thank you, Mr. Clemens.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, this is a receive and file. So we are now going to move into board actions on individual items. The first is item 6A. This is a 2018 public hearing for rate increase. Mr. Clemens.
Yes, sir, Chairman. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors at this time hold an open public hearing to hear public comments and protests on the proposed increase of charges for wastewater treatment services and facilities. And number two, adopt an ordinance of the board increasing the charges for wastewater treatment services and facilities. As a matter of background, the district retained the services of Bartle Wells and Associates to perform a rate study and to develop a long-term financial plan which addresses the district needs to recover the cost of providing water treatment service and maintaining 9 miles of pipe. In addition to basic operation maintenance, the study considered the need to construct the required redundant facilities to provide uninterrupted service in the event that the primary system fails or requires maintenance. The district has not had a rate increase since 2010. We currently have one of the lowest wastewater treatment fees in the region. I think exactly number two, with Santa Maria having the lowest and this district having the second lowest wastewater fees in the region. And after this projected increase, if it's passed, then the district will still be one of the bottom three with regard to total rates. I got lost there for a second. I just want to say that if anyone comes up for protest, make sure we get your name and where you're from, because we have to log each protest and what lot number or APN number they're from. So as the public comes up to speak, please let us know what your address is or where you live, I should say. in a matter of a protest. Okay, and with regard to discussion, we have Bardo Wells and Associates. We have Alex Handlers here, who actually did all the work on a financial plan, and we'll allow him to make a presentation so that perhaps he can answer a lot of questions and then be further asked. So, go ahead, Alex.
Thank you. Nice to see everyone again. It's been a few months since I was here with kind of the draft presentation. This time I'm going to present the final results, kind of an abbreviated, a little bit abbreviated version of last time, but I think for sake of folks here and whoever may be watching, we're kind of just going to walk through and kind of lay out what we did and how we came to our final results. Moving on to the next slide. Just real quickly, I'm going to cover a little background to our study, talk about your current rates, some observations there, discuss some of the financial challenges that this district is facing and what that means in terms of financial projections and rate projections, and show you the proposed rates. And finally, just a little bit of information about Prop 218, which is something that is very important from the legal standpoint regarding sewer rates. So first, who we are. Real briefly, we're an independent public financial advising firm. We specialize in water, wastewater, rates, and finance, Bartle Wells Associates. We've been in California for over 50 years, worked for over 500 agencies. I've personally worked for 100 to 150 agencies, so very familiar with this line of work. For our study, on the next slide, some of the key things, a little background on the district. It's a community-governed public agency, like most of them. You've got the board members representing the three member agencies, Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano CSD. You've got about 9 miles of sewer conveyance trunk lines that pick up the wastewater from your member agencies and deliver it to your regional wastewater treatment plant for treatment. Then after treating to very high regulatory standards, it's disposed of with an ocean outfall. Key thing is that this district is financially self-supporting. You don't rely on some massive influx of property taxes to pay the bills. It's mostly sewer rate revenues. So with that, your rates have got to be adequate to fund the cost of service. And that's really my mantra. These rates are designed to fund the cost of service. What we did to get there was kind of twofold. One is develop a detailed financial plan looking out over the next 10 years, kind of looking big picture, to determine what are the overall level of revenue increases you need to remain financially stable, fund your operations, adequate level for maintenance of your aging facilities, fund the redundancy project. And the next thing we did was re-derive the sewer treatment rates from the bottom up in line with Prop 218. You need to demonstrate your rates are fair and equitable, and we have done that. As far as your rates go, most folks here know you pay a flat monthly wastewater service charge. In that prior slide, if I can just go back one sec, it's currently a little less than $15 a month, which is pretty phenomenal. I work with a lot of agencies that have much higher rates. Nobody likes to pay them, I understand, but that's pretty low compared to what I see in the industry. Commercial ratepayers pay fixed rates also based on criteria such as customer type, number of employees, a whole range of factors to try to make sure they're paying their fair share as well. Your bills are collected on the sewer bills that are sent out from each of your member agencies. I know there's consideration of transitioning to recover that on the annual property tax rolls, which would be perfectly acceptable as well. Rates haven't been increased, as you know, since May 2010, so it's been quite a while. It's been almost 6 years since the last rate increase, which is pretty impressive considering costs continue to rise year by year. So the district's done a good job getting by with the current rates. I know you've done some things to keep your costs down. Maybe some of those things work in the short run, but in the long run, you're going to need to maintain your infrastructure, et cetera. You can't put stuff off forever. And the other point I wanted to make is your rates, when you add in the local rates from each member agency for sewer collection, as well as the sewer treatment rates that are charged by the district, you're among the lowest rates in the region. And that's the next slide, shows a survey of a number of regional agencies that we pulled. I'm going to point out that a lot of these other regional agencies are facing rate increases. Many of them have already adopted significant multi-year rate increases. So You're at the bottom end here. I expect even with the rate increases being proposed here, you're going to stay on the lower end compared to these other agencies. Going on to the next slide, we talk about the district's facing a number of financial challenges, and I just wanted to highlight those. One is the redundancy project, as it is termed. Your treatment facilities are been around a long time, aging, in need of some major upgrades to make sure they can continue to provide safe, reliable service and meet your ongoing regulatory requirements, which seem to step up year after year. The project cost is estimated in the $19 million range, all in. On top of that, there's going to be operating costs that are currently estimated in the $400,000 to $500,000 range per year. So a very significant project for the district. On top of that, you've got a lot of facilities that are, you know, 50 years old or so that are in need of ongoing maintenance to keep them in good shape. You've been okay for a while. Once you put in a facility, it's new. It doesn't require a lot of maintenance, but you've got a lot of stuff that's approaching the end of its useful life. So we did build in some funding to make sure you can keep those facilities, hopefully in good working condition, continue to meet your permit requirements. And the third thing is cost inflation. Every agency faces this. Water, wastewater agencies, and other utilities in general, cost inflation tends to be higher for them than it is for a typical urban consumer. So people may hear of a consumer price index going up 1% or 2% per year these days, which is pretty low. That's not what your typical utility faces. The inflation for utilities is more along the range of 4% to 5% per year, according to some of the indices that are kept out there. So those are, I think, the big three things that are facing this district. In terms of the redundancy project, that's really a big one, $19 million. We evaluated financing that project two ways. One is with conventional bonds, and one is with state revolving fund loans. Up here it's called SRF, is what it's commonly termed. The district is doing the right thing by pursuing the state revolving fund loans. The current rate is only 1.6%. for what is now a 30-year term loan. They used to only give 20-year loans, but as of last year, they've extended that to 30. I ran the numbers, and using an SRF loan is equivalent to using conventional financing with a 25% grant. So that's a big win for the ratepayers, about a 25% grant funding, the equivalent. The other good thing about the state revolving fund loans, the first debt service payment's not due till a year after the project is certified complete. So you don't have to have your rates in place to fund debt service next year, but you do have to phase them in so that you can afford that debt service and the new operating costs when the facilities come online. On top of that, you're going to need to fund the design and permitting, which is part of that $19 million. $1.6 million is going to be need to fund it in the upcoming years. That's either going to require a temporary drawdown of fund reserves, which could potentially be largely reimbursed down the line when you do your financing. The other option is you may be eligible to get planning loan from State Revolving Fund, which would then finance that. Then that planning loan gets rolled into the long-term loan. I won't ramble on about the State Revolving Fund loans too much other than it's excellent that the district is pursuing this. I mentioned the key thing we did was, you know, look long-term and build some financial projections to figure out where your rates need to go in the big picture. Some of the key assumptions that we built into that, we based the operating costs off the 2015-16 budget, which is kind of a bare-bones budget to begin with. We assume 4% cost inflation, which seemed like a reasonable amount for planning purposes. We did include funding for a full-time general manager, but we also cut some other costs for administration expenses, assuming that when a GM came on, you'd be able to eliminate some of those admin costs. Mentioned we already built in costs for financing and for operating for the redundancy project. And we did build in what I think is a minimum prudent level for funding repairs, replacements of $500,000 per year. It may sound like a lot to your ratepayers, but if you talk with your engineers, look at the state of your facilities, this is not a high-end number. It's probably a low-end number if you look long-term. And also we built in the fine for the regional board that would be paid this year. You know, it doesn't matter if it's paid this year or next year in the big picture, but we wanted to make sure it was included in the projections. On the next slide, this shows kind of a graphic of what the revenues and expenditures look like. a few things to point out. All the stacked bars there, the blue, yellow, orange, those are projection of the expenditures over the next 10 years. The dotted red line that goes across is your estimated revenues from the current rates based on what actually came in last fiscal year. And you can see it's not going to cut it. The current level of rates doesn't come close to funding what needs to be covered in upcoming years. With the proposed rate increases, which is the blue line, you can see this year you're going to have a pretty big deficit. Next year you kind of make up for that shortfall. And then in the future, it's balanced budgets throughout. So in the big picture, your fund reserves are going to stay similar to where they are now. You're going to have financial stability. You're going to be able to fund your project. And the deficits that you're facing this year can be made up over the next 2 years if everything goes as planned. It doesn't always go as planned. On the next slide, the second thing we did was make sure your rates were equitably recovering the cost of service. So instead of just keeping the same rate structure going forward, we wanted to rederive the rates using reasonable assumptions for all the different customer classes of wastewater flow and wastewater strength, and make sure everyone's paying their fair share, understanding that there are a number of perspectives as what the right customer category should be. There's a range of reasonable, I think, when you approach rate development, but we try to be fair to everybody. The rate structure hasn't been looked at in almost 10 years, and under Prop 218, you've got to make sure they're fair, and we worked with your attorney as well to make sure they were comfortable. They're very thorough in making sure that they were comfortable that the rates had a real solid basis. So we did that, and it resulted in most of the rates being similar to where they are now. Your current rate structure is pretty much in line with cost of service. However, there were some modifications to some rate classes. Some folks are going to face a little more significant rate impacts than the others. And that's been sent out in the Prop 218 notice that was sent all to everyone out there so everyone can see what those are. It's in the report as well. I just wanted to highlight a few of those revisions just to make sure everyone's clear. One is the residential rates. The rate realignment resulted in a slight decrease in residential rates before you start accounting for the necessary rate increases. It worked out to be, I think it was like a 30-cent decrease compared to where they are now. So your rates have been pretty darn close, kind of validating that the current rate structure is close to in line. Trailer mobile home spaces. Before 2007, these folks paid the same rates as the standard residential rate. And for some reason in 2007, those rates were decreased to below 30% of the residential rate, which is quite low. Right now it's a rate of a little over $4 a month. Pretty low rate considering a lot of the costs of this district are fixed costs. Very little of the costs actually vary based on the changes in wastewater flow from month to month, staffing, facilities, et cetera. You've got to incur these costs like most wastewater agencies do regardless. So that charge is being bumped up to 60% of the standard residential rate. Hotels, motels, interestingly, are currently paying a rate that's higher than a residential unit. So they're paying a rate that's almost 6% higher. That didn't seem fair when we looked through the data. So we're recommending a rate that's 87.5% is where it worked out of the standard residential rate. So it's about 20% lower than it is now. And that reflects the reduced flows and loadings that come from a typical hotel unit compared to a typical residential unit. And the third thing was the restaurants and eating establishments. These types of customers typically have pretty high flow and typically very high strength wastewater. The current rates are extremely low for restaurants and eating establishments. The new rates we came up with, we try to be extremely fair. They're a little bit higher than they currently are now. I think they're still going to be low rates when you compare to other agencies out there. But there is a bigger bump up for folks in restaurants. Moving on to the next slide. What does it all mean when you put it all together? Well, the top line shows what happens with the monthly residential charges. The current rate's $14.86. It'd be going up to $25.48 over 5 years, five fiscal years. The plan was to phase it in over 5 years. That assumes state revolving fund loan financing. If you needed to get conventional bond financing, which a lot of agencies do, the rates would have to be about $3 per month higher. So that's, you know, a little over $11, $10 to $11 increase spread over the next 5 years. So if you really look at the big term, rates haven't increased since 2010 to 2020. They're going up the equivalent of about a dollar per month over that time frame. Percentage-wise, it seems like a lot because your rates are extremely low to begin with. But in the big picture, it is, again, $11 or so spread over 5 years. One key thing we wanted to point out, the first rate increase would kick into effect as soon as the ordinances can be done, assuming everything gets approved, meaning the rates couldn't go into effect till April. And I wanted to point out the next rate increase would go in effect next fiscal year, which starts July 1. But assuming bills are going to be recovered on the property tax rolls, people aren't going to have to start paying on that till their semi-annual property tax payments in December, at least by December 10th and by April 10th are the final due dates for those bills. Some may point out, hey, no fair, you're doing a couple of rate increases real close to each other. That's true, but the good news is the only reason this first rate increase is so close to the next one is because it's been deferred for the year while the whole process has played out, making sure that the engineering numbers were correct and that this study was correct too. So people have benefited by not having to pay this increased rate since the beginning of this fiscal year. On the next slide, wanted to put in perspective graphically, the blue line shows the rates since 2010-11. There's been no rate increases. Then you factor in the proposed rate increases going out to 2019-20, and that equates to an increase compounded of about 6% per year over that 10-year period. So not all that different than what is typically considered inflation for a utility agency. And that's pretty impressive considering the size of the projects that you need to fund in upcoming years. Next slide shows the detail of all the proposed rates for all the different customer classes. We just wanted to stick it in the presentation to make sure it's there. This is also the same numbers that were sent out to, again, all the property owners in the Prop 218 notice. Moving on to the next slide, Prop 218 is kind of the governing law of the land in California with water and sewer rates. It was enacted in 1986 by voter initiative, and it added Articles 13, C, and D to the California Constitution. So these are constitutional requirements. The law itself had some vagaries in it, so there's been a number of court cases over the years that have further refined our understanding of what it means to comply with Prop 218. And essentially, there's really two components. One is the procedural requirements that you have followed, and two is the substantive requirements that we've also followed here that I'll go into. As far as procedural requirements, you have to mail notice of the proposed increases in the public hearing at least 45 days prior to the public hearing. This was done. The district was concerned. They wanted to make sure everyone received the notice, so you kind of went above and beyond the minimums of Prop 218, and you noticed not only all the property owners of record, but you also sent notices to the local address or billing address in cases where that was different to make sure everyone was noticed. Rates are subject to majority protest, meaning if more than 50% of parcels submit written protests, you can't move forward with the rate increases. Now, from the numbers I've heard, you know we're close to that. But you went above and beyond the minimums of Prop 218 by putting in your notice how people can protest and where they can mail their notice to. That's not required under the law. So our findings were here. Obviously, you followed the procedural requirements, and we worked with your attorney to make sure that was done as well. And once you go through the Prop 218 process, the board always has the ability of adopting rates up to the maximum of Prop 218. If you go out 3 years and you get a windfall of cash and the project ends up costing half of what it's projected to, I'm not anticipating this is going to happen, but if it did, you don't have to implement the full rate increase. On the other side of the coin, you can never exceed the rate increases adopted by Prop 218 unless you go through the process again. So if for some reason the state revolving fund loan was to run out of money, I'll tell you that I doubt they will, and they've got a lot of financing capacity, and you needed funds to use conventional bond financing, you'd have to come back and go through the process again in a few years. But we don't anticipate that happening. The next slide, the substantive requirements. Pretty much fourfold are the key things. One is the revenues cannot exceed the cost of providing service. You are a single-purpose agency. There are some other cities out there in California historically that were using their sewer funds and water funds as cash cows for the general funds. Considering this is just a wastewater district, that's really not an issue here. You have, you know, budgets, audits that are independently audited. You have financial projections demonstrating compliance with this. Number two, revenues can only be used for the purpose collected. Again, you're a single-purpose agency. This is all you use your revenues for: wastewater treatment, effluent disposal services. Three is one that's the understanding of this has been refined in recent years. The amount of the fee shall not exceed the proportional cost of service to each parcel. Now, the courts have recognized that rate making is not an exact science. You don't have to try to measure the amount of pipeline serving one property versus another property across town. But there are some principles that the courts have signified are important for rate making. We followed all this in this study. We calculated all the rates from the ground up using very reasonable assumptions of wastewater flow and strength in the different classes to ensure that the rates at the end of the day have a defensible and basis that's in the administrative record in case someone was ever to sue you. And finally, the fees can only be charged if the service is immediately used or immediately available to the parcel in question. There were some water agencies that were charging folks on vacant properties for water service as kind of an availability charge. You don't do that here. You only levy your wastewater treatment charges on parcels that have connected to the sewer systems of the member agencies and have initiated sewer service. So I think you're pretty solid here that you're not overbilling anybody. So at the end of the day, you know, the whole purpose of the study was to make sure you're funding what you need to fund on the last slide. You're complying with Prop 218. Again, these are the first rate increases in a number of years. Nobody likes rate increases. Ratepayers, we know, don't like paying anymore. Board members, council members don't like raising rates. But you've got to cover your cost of service, and that's what this study was about. Again, they're not insignificant rate increases from a percentage standpoint. But at the end of the day, even with these rate increases, it looks like your rates are going to be on the lower end compared to most of the other regional and statewide agencies out there. So that concludes what I wanted to cover here. Happy to answer any questions or turn it over to the board for comments, discussion.
So thanks for that very thorough presentation. Don't go very far. We may have questions. Sure. Jim, do you have any questions?
No questions on the report.
Okay. Mary, any questions? Okay. I do want to make sure that you can make a clarification for us. You did financial projections, and in those projections, you did include $1.1 million for the fine. And so I want to, can you maybe make a distinction between that and what is can be covered by a rate increase? I think there's been some comments in the past where there seems to have been some confusion on that item.
Sure. You know, I will defer to your attorney if I say anything that they disagree with, but, you know, basically this is a single-purpose agency. The revenue's coming in. They've got to be able to fund your cost of service. And if you get a fine, could that be funded by rates? Of course it can be. That's part of the cost of doing business that other agencies have faced as well. The fine is no fun to have to pay a large fine. I know it's been litigated. However, it's a one-time cost. And when you look at it, that's really what's drawing down your fund reserves in the near term. In the long term, your rates are establishing balanced budgets based on your future expenditure needs. So in the long term, that fine is you know, going to be long gone, and it's not going to be a component of your future rates. They would need to be where they are regardless of not whether you had this fine.
Okay, and then consequences, what's the downside of not taking action tonight? Because I want to ask that question because we've got a redundancy project. The steel's got to go through a permitting process. And so I want to kind of get your take on, you know, what would happen if the board did not take action on this tonight.
Well, you're still dealing with your regulatory requirements and the need for the redundancy project. That doesn't go away. If you don't have the rate increases in place to support the project or to get the financing for that, two things happen. One is you're going to have to go through this process all over again because you're going to need the revenues to fund this project. And two is it could jeopardize your ability to get the project done on time and jeopardize your ability to get state revolving fund loans or other types of financing. I know the district's already done outreach with the state revolving fund program, and basically no one is going to lend you any money unless you've got the financial capacity to repay that debt. So could you defer? I wouldn't recommend it. You could always continue to evaluate the finances each year, and if it turned out that the project came in under budget, again, even once the rates are adopted under Prop 218, you can always opt to implement a slightly lower rate if finance is warranted. We don't know that's the case at this stage of the game, but so you always retain that flexibility.
Okay. Great, thank you. John, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
No, I think Alex covered it pretty well.
Okay. Very good. So let me open this up to the public. And Mr. Was that Laversty? Oh, okay. Thank you for patiently waiting, sir.
I was jumping the gun. Well, I've read the details. I've read the report. And what I'd like to say is that the public notice that was sent out really has insufficient information in it for a ratepayer to make a protest. And for instance, when I read his report, the main project, construction of the redundancy facilities, which were to cost $19 million, include a $3 million reserve for a contingency. So there's a big guesstimate in there. And then the plans are to maintain a $5.5 million contingency fund. And the interest on the contingency fund at 3% is $150,000 per annum. At 1.6% is going to be $80,000 per annum. Assuming that $5 million is the last part of the process that's paid, that's going to cost us at 1.6%, you know, over $2 million. I don't understand why we have to maintain a reserve fund of $5 million. The reserve fund of $5 million plus the contingency factor of $3 million is over 45% of the total project cost. And also omitted from the fact sheet was this $1.1 million payment for the Regional Quality Control Board for the discharge violation. And to me, I mean, the fine is, as a ratepayer, I end up paying that fine. And as a ratepayer, all I'm doing is profiting another governmental organization. So I don't know how you go about protesting that, but I think that fine is outrageous and should be protested. Also, in reading his report, wages and benefits are budgeted to increase a whopping $550,000, 47%, over a five-year period of time. And the sanitary district business is really quite small. Right now it's $3 million. It doesn't have a large workforce. And yet we're budgeting for a general manager at $225,000 per annum. I want you to know that right now at Cal Poly, they're hiring a medical doctor, and the rate for the medical doctor is $112,000 per annum. I don't know how they get come up with a budget of $225,000 for a general manager. As far as the comparison to other communities are concerned, I mean, we're not talking about apples and apples. I mean, those rates are going to vary no matter what, and I consider that just kind of window dressing. For instance, one major difference would be just the number of households. So we have more households than others, and so our rate should be lower. So what I'd like to see the board do is to require that the current proposal be rebudgeted, you know, taking into consideration the reserve funds and taking into consideration the contingency cost and more realistic operating assumptions. And then there's one other thing. I think that five-year budgeting or 10-year budgeting is very, very difficult to do. My background is finance and administration. I managed manufacturing companies doing $150 million in sales, and food ingredient companies doing $1 billion in sales. Going off 5 years is very, very difficult. 10 years is impossible. I really think you guys should budget every 3 years and do a rate pay revision on a 3-year term. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments, sir.
Michael
Furman.
I, too, am here to protest the rate increase. I second the prior speaker's comments. I think he did an excellent job. My concern is not that we need a rate increase, because we candidly do, but the level of that increase. We're looking at an 18% increase immediately, 2 weeks, and we're looking at another 12% in 120 days. That's a 30% increase in a period of 135 days. Come on, guys. Inflation isn't that big. The speaker from the consulting company said that they look at a utility at 4% per year inflation rate. Not one of our increases are anywhere near 4% there. 10, 9, and 8 going out. They're double the inflation rate. What's wrong here? Have we not got enough reserves today to cover normal maintenance, repair, and replacement? Do we not have adequate sinking funds to cover things being obsoleted and having to be completely replaced? Something doesn't feel right when we're looking at a 30% increase right out of the chute. My other last comment is the bar chart on the backside. Doesn't seem adequate because the three numbers shown for our district, nowhere do you find them on the rate sheet. Gets a little confusing when you're trying to say, what the hell am I looking at here? I'm comparing apples and oranges. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? I didn't have any other speaker requests formed.
When the prior speaker said, Beatrice Spencer, and I'm here to protest not just one, but two addresses, which I can give you later, and I have a third one probably too. When he said that things just don't make sense, he's really right. Because if you're looking at current expenses, these rate increases don't really need to be this way. But this is a part of our rate increase. We have been litigating the fine, which the prior speaker said at $1.1 million was too much money. But here's a copy of a paper, which I'd be happy to share, that back on April of 2012, the State Water Resources Control Board offered this district's board a settlement of $775,000, but it was refused, and since then we have been litigating for this many days. So, when the board refused in its infinite wisdom to pay $775,000 for the fine, we now have the fine of $1.1 million, which we are now having a rate increase to help offset. The other issue that I wanted to bring up is going back to the Knutson report. On page 61, back in 2005, our reserve save our life savings, our savings account, had $19 million. So when these earlier speakers say, do we not have enough money in reserves? The answer is no, we do not. Our reserve money has gone away. And when the presenter said that the district did implement some cost-saving measures, I would say, yes, we did, when Mr. Wallace retired. That was our greatest cost-saving measure. Because since that time, this plant has been operating very well and really trying to live within its means. But we have these other issues which have been nagging us since April of 2012 and before during Mr. Wallace's years. So in 2005, there was $9.5 million, which would have at that time funded the redundancy project. Now we're paying $19 million for a redundancy project. It was also mentioned earlier that the fine is part of doing business. Well, the fine is only going to go away if we stop litigating. 1,398 days so far since the board turned down the offer of $775,000 fine. If we don't work towards ending the litigation that we are currently continuing to pursue, we are never going to get ahead. We have to stop this. These gentlemen are right. This doesn't make sense. It hasn't made sense to me for a year sitting out here watching as this board refuses to settle this litigation. We had an opportunity for a reduced fine. I just cannot understand why you wouldn't accept that. But what's even more frustrating is that you continue to refuse, clearly, because we haven't gotten out of the litigation business, as Ms. Tacker often refers to it. We don't seem to get ourselves out of the very same, the problem that we just, that keeps costing these ratepayers money. So please, please, please. I mean, 1,398 days, folks. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'm not a ratepayer. I happen to be in this category over here, at the very highest bar, and we're going to be $165 a month, not $120, here in Los Osos, where I live. While I don't live here, I follow this district very closely. I guess I can't turn my head from a train wreck. There are a lot of issues with what's happening tonight. And it really started when Mr. Handlers was here a few months ago to explain the rate increase to your board. I distinctly recall two board members, Mr. Scholes and Ms. Lucy, saying, we don't want to do this during the holidays. We want to have a discussion later. And the notice went out December 30th. While technically the holidays were sort of over by then, your board was distracted with the Knutson Report and the Wallace Show, and I really don't think you got to have the conversation with your community about what was coming. You didn't go to your communities and have this conversation whether or not to protest the rate increase with your properties. Your city hall got one of these notices. This building got one of these notices. You know, you can go around and all the properties you own that use the sewer got a notice. But I didn't see it pop up on any of your agendas to have the conversation with your board whether or not to protest. And you had that right. The $1.1 million fine is great heartburn, and that is Wallace collateral damage. The 1.2 or 1.3, whatever that number is now that you've spent on litigating it, is also Wallace collateral damage. The Oceano building, I don't think you want to do this until that billing has been commenced and caught up for Oceano, because this will be hugely confusing, not only for those ratepayers, but I think from an accounting standpoint, it's going to be a nightmare. Your notice at the bottom of this chart says rates are effective October of 2015. I think you can, that you can, that's what it says, so that's what the ratepayers led to believe. I think you can hold off, and if you do accept this tonight, you can actually implement it at a later date, and I would encourage you to maybe wait till the fiscal year so that you have a starting date. Something else that I don't like about this chart is that it is in a monthly. You're getting bills every other month, and I know that's confusing to the ratepayer. In Oceano, when they get their bill, which they haven't gotten in a while, when they get their bill is $29.72 for this portion of the bill. When they look here and they see, oh, it's $24.61, it gives the impression that their costs went down, but it's monthly. So if you're going to have a chart like this, I think you should have shown them the apples and apples comparison, either bi-monthly or, I mean, it has to be in a chart that shows the every other month billing. I have so much. Last thing, when you do go to the SRF loan and you go to the state revolving fund, it's the State Water Resources Control Board that handles that money. Oceano is a disadvantaged community, and I hope that whoever's negotiating that loan ask for a lower rate, because they have the discretion at that board to lower the rate. They have 0% loans. So you can, there's a lot you can do. I just think this is unfortunate that it's gotten this far without having a rich, robust conversation with the people in your district. And I, you know, tonight, if you approve it, I would encourage you wait till the fiscal year to implement it.
Debbie Peterson, I live in Grover Beach, and I wanted to respond to the previous speakers. I fully support everything that's been said so far. In response to the question, what can we as ratepayers do, for any of you who are watching and for any of you who are out there in the audience for the first time, come to the meetings, pay attention. And finally, the third alternative is sue the district for misuse of public funds. What I wanted to go over was a couple of the, in my view, inequities in the fees for various categories. Single-family dwelling units generally will use more because they're larger than an apartment complex or a multi-unit, and that's borne out in the reports that you have created. The other inequity that goes with the multi-units and goes with the apartments, in addition to apartments being considered to be a the same usage as a single-family dwelling unit, is that very often, and certainly this is true in Grover Beach, I don't know if it's true in other places, but in Grover Beach, the apartment complexes and some of the homes on larger lots have been built with 3/4-inch meters. And so because they have a 3/4-inch meter and they have the capacity to use more water, whether they do or not, they pay more. So I live in an apartment, and I pay more for my water because I have the option of using more in a small apartment than I would in a older single-family home. So there's a double whammy there for people who live in apartments and multifamily units. And what I would also like to remind all of you is that while clearly there aren't enough of us here to protest in any way that gives you, that forces you to in any way make any adjustments, I think that there have been some very good suggestions made, and I hope that as a board you would consider those and make some changes. And the final one that I hadn't mentioned yet is the mobile homes generally use about the same amount of water as a house would. And so I think to penalize, and I will call it penalize apartment residents and benefit mobile homeowners is inequitable.
I don't normally state my name. I will tonight. Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande, ratepayer. I am opposed to this, and I'm opposed for numerous reasons. The $1 million fine, that was avoidable. The board sat up there and allowed a conflict of interest with John Wallace to occur. You did not do due diligence checking the warrants before they were paid and any number of things. So that could have been handled. The board failed to do that for us. We have asked time and time again over the last year that a group of us have been coming to mediate that fine. Yet today, $1,398, days later, we're still in the litigation business. This has to end, guys. This has to end. I've also brought up many times this benefit package. 100% benefits when people retire. That is not sustainable. We're here tonight talking about a rate increase, but you have not put it on the agenda to talk about that benefit package that the rate payers are paying. That's wrong. You know, the general manager, one of these gentlemen brought up a good point about how much we're offering to pay them compared to a doctor for Cal Poly. Doctors only save lives, so they're not worth much. But we seem to always compare this, the rates here, to Orange County. We compare apples and oranges when we do this. We should be comparing these rates that we want to pay a general manager to Santa Maria. Let's get more realistic and let's get more local and really look at those rates. Oceano, boy are they getting it socked to them. They have not had a bill come in months. I wonder if they know that the rates are going up and to what amount. And do they really know that that's going on property tax at the end of the year? Had I not been coming to these meetings for the last year, I wouldn't have known. How does somebody keep putting away when they're used to X amount, but the amount's going up pretty damn quickly over the next 130 days, I think somebody said. And I hear it said that apartments, mobile homes, and houses use different rates of water. I beg to differ with that. I own a house. I don't have, I call it irrigation or irritation, as I call it, on my property. If it doesn't rain, my landscape dies. I conserve water and everything else. So I don't think that somebody who lives in an apartment or a mobile home uses less water necessarily when they shower. I do the old military shower on and off as I shower because of this drought. So I take exception to the thing that they're saying because of what type of dwelling you live in, you use less water. I don't wash my car. You're going to tell me somebody who lives in a mobile home doesn't wash their car, wasting water that I don't? So I find that, again, apples and oranges. The notice that was sent out was confusing. Was it on purpose? Who knows? But you need to make it clear to people. You really do. That is your obligation. And in so many ways, you haven't done it for the people. And they're right. We don't have enough people to stop this rate pay from going in. And I understand why it's going in to some degree, but not totally. Now, to end this, one kudos that Mr. Clemens didn't get, and I do believe you have another one coming, John. There have been no injuries at the plant. That helps with workman's comp, so kudos to you for that also. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Please come forward.
Sharon Brown, ratepayer from Grover Beach. I'm not here to protest. And while I understand perfectly the frustration of everyone here regarding litigation, the amount of the fine, this huge cloud still hanging over us. I think that that is a separate issue. And what we need to look at now is to move forward with what we need to do in the district, including the funding of the redundancy project. Had it been done years ago, as it should have been, this would not be an issue. But it is an issue now. We cannot go back and change that history. We must move forward now. And we need to figure out how we're going to pay for what we need to do. So that was my comment.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Please come forward.
Ron Holt, Arroyo Grande. I want to echo Ms. Brown's comments. I agree that this is something that we need to deal with, and it's going to cost money. I do think that the others have brought up some good points, though, about the timing and the scheduling of these rate increases and the way they, perhaps even the way they've been publicized. I think maybe we should relook at that and take a better chance to get the rest of the citizens, those who haven't been coming to these meetings, involved in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. Is there anyone else?
Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. I just wanted to say that I agree with the previous two speakers. We need to go forward with this. And I understand why people who haven't been coming to the meetings or monitoring this very closely would not understand why we need to. So maybe some education to the public, some outreach would be beneficial. And we do need to move on with this. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public and bring it back to the board. Let's have some discussion. Jim, you want to start?
Yes, I'm obviously no one likes rate increases. I don't like rate increases. You don't like rate increases. A rate increase, if I vote to do a rate increase tonight, that affects me personally as well. So I think we need to have a good understanding of why the rate increase is necessary. First of all, regulatory requirements in our discharge permit have changed. The plant operates on a National Pollution Elimination Discharge System permit, which has been tightened with respect to the discharge requirements that the plant has to meet. And the existing plant would be barely capable of meeting those requirements. Second issue is the redundancy project. The reason that we barely can or cannot meet those updated discharge requirements goes to the redundancy project. The plant currently operates with a single device called a fixed film reactor or a trickling filter. It's the final stage of our process. That is the only such device that works in the secondary treatment part of our process before discharge to the ocean. We also have a secondary clarifier, which is a different part of the process. Those have no redundancy, so if they were to break down tonight, we would be within a couple of hours violating our existing discharge requirements. Many people have mentioned a very large fine that the district incurred in 2010 with a very large sewage spill. While it may be true that the Regional Water Board would have negotiated at one point that fine, that is really no longer an option. So what I have to look at is that the fine, as the gentleman calculating our rates indicated, is about $1.1 million. What concerns me even more is that our cost of litigation to date is approaching $1 million by all accounts. Hopefully we can find a way to stop that. I agree that the litigation has gone on too much. I think that in terms of looking for additional financing and additional rates, that we need to address that, get the fine paid, stop the litigation, and move forward. State revolving fund financing. I commend the staff for pursuing that. I think that we, as was pointed out, we do need to demonstrate that we have the ability to pay back if we got a state revolving fund loan. And the proposed increase would not only fund the normal operation of the district going forward, which would only be an incremental increase, but would also fund the additional backup portion of the secondary process at the plant, which makes, which is called the redundancy project. That's additional equipment that would back up and better treat the secondary process, to back up that fixed film reactor that's been soldiering on without being overhauled in 30 years, because it can't be taken offline. It's the only piece of equipment that does that. Benefit package was brought up. I agree with the need to revisit the benefit package, and when we get the new general manager hired, I'll be asking them to bring that forward. As far as noticing, I would urge people to pay attention to what's going on in the district. It's not a real sexy thing to look at a wastewater treatment plant, but it's a necessary thing. And people paying attention is what keeps the keeps everything above board and makes sure that the increases that are necessary are indeed the most economical that can be achieved. Finally, I do agree that the redundancy project as proposed does appear to have fairly significant allowances built into it, and as a result, I would expect that that project would come in hopefully somewhat lower than the $19 million that was advertised for it. So also, I note that we do not have to, as was stated, we cannot increase rates beyond this amount, but we're also not obligated, should that work out, that the project comes in under budget, that we don't have to enact the full amount of the increase. So cost of business not doing the redundancy project, I don't see that as an option. Two reasons. I've already stated the one that the discharge requirements have been tightened, and that the plant would not be capable of meeting those new discharge requirements without the redundancy project. Second, if we for some reason have another spill or a serious failure to meet our discharge requirements, the district will incur fines that would be very large. And it seems to me that responsible operation is to make sure that we meet the discharge requirements every minute of every day of every year going forward. And non-compliance is not an option, and it's a very costly non-option. So those are my thoughts on it. And I'm prepared to support this rate increase tonight. Hopefully, again, the project will come in under budget, and we won't need to make the, you know, the final incremental increases that are necessary, but I think it's far better to meet the discharge requirements that are established to protect our environment and quality of life here. I think that's our duty and responsibility as members of this board. And again, I'm prepared to move forward with it tonight.
Thank you, Jim. Mary?
There's several areas that, first of all, I want to thank every single person who spoke. I actually was able to get something valuable out of each person's public testimony. I think that people are absolutely right. It is our job to be good stewards of the people's money. And there is some contradictions that are not settling well with me, and I'm somewhat confused on, as somebody put so well recently. But so, first of all, I had asked Mr. Clemens or staff about, let me just back up here for a minute, about the reactor. And the reason why I had asked him that question was to see how I would classify it. Would I classify it as a crisis or would I classify it as a high maintenance project? And staff answered that very, very clearly for me. So I just wanted to know the severity of the fixed film reactor. The redundancy project, the fixed film reactor is weaved all through the redundancy project. And I have problems with spending up to $19 million without having a plan that's been thoroughly fleshed out. I'm concerned about doing knee-jerk reactions and not discussing the rate increase to the full extent. I think some people brought up benefits packets. That is a large contribution. We have a 30-year aging plant. Yes, we definitely need a redundancy project. I'm not saying that we don't. But do we need the project at $19 million? Are we going to put $19 million into a 30-year-old project, which probably could pay for a new project, an up-to-date project? But that hasn't been thoroughly hashed out. And so it makes me not confused, but uncomfortable. I agree with people on the length of budgeting. When you do a plan, you can do a consolidated plan for 5 to 10 years. That works. But when you're budgeting, you don't do 5 to 10 years because you cannot tell what's going to happen in that 5 to 10. You can't read the future. We don't know if something at the plant is going to be damaged from a fault line or something like that. We would have to go in and raise rates and change everything. So I wholeheartedly agree with when you're budgeting long-term, no longer than 3 years. As far as planning goes, yes, a 5 to 10 year plan is absolutely appropriate. So I like the idea of going back and rebudgeting and looking at the rate increase a little bit closer. Whether it starts on a calendar year, programmatic year, or fiscal year is not really a pressing issue in my eyes. But what is a pressing issue in my eyes is that we have a community that that a contract was not signed with that is not being billed for sewer services, but still we're going to the people and asking them to do a rate increase when we at some point have to deal with contractual business with servicing Oceano. And what that leads me to think is that it's not just looking at the billing of Oceano, but looking at every single sewer connection we have
for the sanitation district, because really the reality is we don't know how many people move, people change addresses, places get built, places get torn down. So we haven't quite looked at the full scope of sewer services in the county, I mean in the South County, excuse me. So at this time, I would actually like the board to discuss this rate increase, and I would support rebudgeting it out and looking at it. But at this time, I can't support a rate increase going through tonight.
Thank you for that, Mary. So let me say I was actually sort of on that same wavelength initially about not moving forward, especially in light of comments that have been made with the Knudsen report. And then I've kind of calmed myself down and started looking back at the facts. And so I'm going to kind of walk through, and I agree with the majority of what, Jim, you've said. I do want to ask a question really quickly of staff. John, where are we in the process with moving to the county tax roll?
With regard to moving to the county tax roll, we were waiting to see the result of tonight. Because if we go to the county tax roll, we have to inform them of what we'd be charging. And obviously, if we go to them next year, then it asks whether or not the board passes the rate increase tonight. It was a factor. So we had to figure out what's going on here.
Great. And Mr. Loversteve talked about why do the reserves need to be $5 million, and why are we looking at a 30% contingency fund? So if someone can respond to that, and then if we have an opportunity to take a look at it as this project gets designed to refine those numbers.
Two things with the contingency. We also have our engineers tonight. They can speak to specifically on the project, but I think Mr. Handlers has what regard to.
Well, I don't want to, we had discussions with the engineers and meetings with the engineers to try to figure out what was appropriate to put in these rate increases. And there is some contingency built in for construction. In every case I've ever worked with every agency, they build the contingency in because you don't know the exact dollar amount, what's going to happen when the costs come at the end of the day. Two things I want to mention. One is even if the cost came in a little bit lower, right, let's say you could shave off a few million dollars, it doesn't mean the rate increases come way down. It means your debt service is a little bit lower, so maybe you can get by with a little bit lower rate increases. But those are the rate increases that we're recommending that are needed to fund the debt service and fund the operations. You're right, it could have, instead of doing it over 5 years, you could have done it over 3 years, but you'd still need to get to the same place. And we try to spread it out to make it as gradual as possible. In terms of the what's referred to as 5.25 million debt reserve, I think that's misreading the numbers. It's $525,000 for each 10 million of debt service. The state revolving fund loan program, as well as all bonds out there, one of the standard securities for that is making sure not only that you have to have rates to fund the debt service, but you have 1 year of debt service held aside in case there's a problem making a payment. With the state revolving fund loan, that's been a part of every state revolving fund loan that they've been issuing in recent years. Historically, they allowed you to phase into that reserve over 10 years. Now they require it to be there 90 days before the project is complete. So you have a little time to put that money there. Again, it's not driving the rate increase. It's just something that's going to, reduce your reserves. But that's a required element of the financing, and it's not 5.25 million. It works out to be, $525,000 for each 10 million. It's a $19 million project, so it's less than $1 million. And those are funds that you're going to get back at the end of the day in 30 years when the debt service is paid off, or you use it for your final debt service payment.
And then the 30% contingency, I know he brought that up as well.
I will defer to the experts on that.
Very good, thank you.
Good evening. I'm Mike Nunley with MKN and Associates, and as you recall, I worked with the district on the work plan for the redundancy project. We received information from Kennedy Jenks on some studies they had done to update the construction cost opinion for the redundancy project. We applied a contingency of 30% on that construction cost. They had a construction cost of around $9.9 million. We did apply 30% contingency. We view that as a project-level contingency. What that means and why that's that large at this point in the process is we haven't begun the detailed design yet. We haven't been through the permitting process yet. Bid climate, you're looking, we're roughly, according to the schedule, we're roughly 16, 17 months away from bidding the project. Bid climate, material costs can have a fairly large impact, not 30%, but all these things can add together. And the way we view contingency and what we recommend to agencies is keep that contingency large, but as you move forward, draw it down if you see you don't need it for that next stage of work. And ultimately, it's not money that you're guaranteeing you're going to spend. It's money that you are going to put aside. One of the advantages of the SRF program is you don't start paying back your debt service until a year after the project's built. Well, a year after the project's built, you've spent all your, you've paid your contractors, you've finished all the design and permitting and all that sort of thing. So that debt service, and Alex can correct me if I'm wrong, is really based on what you've actually drawn from the state. So if you have a contingency of 30%, you get to the end of your project and you haven't drawn that, your debt service is not based on that 30%.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
General manager salary, someone brought up that regarding the, I think, the projected amount was $225,000. Can staff clarify, is that a combination of actual salary and benefits, or what is that number?
I believe that was salary and benefits. There was never a discussion about that much salary. Did you?
Salary and benefits, and it was offset by, I believe it was $80,000 of reduced administrative costs at the same time.
Okay, so that's total comp package is really what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
For planning purposes, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I think the only other two things I'm going to say tonight is I know there was a reference with respect to LAFE accounts and a large number under reserve, and that number it was decreased under, obviously, Mr. Wallace when he was here. But I do want to make sure that folks at home and folks who have not been following us, that there were major projects done. If I'm not correct, Mr. Clemens, you can correct me if you like.
No, there were. They had the centrifuge project that was done, and of course the chlorine contact chamber and number of other smaller, but those were the two bigger ones that had been done over the last five. I'm just speaking over the last 5 or 6 years that I know of. So.
Okay. So I want to go back, and I think Jim, you make a very compelling case with respect to the redundancy project and the time frame that's running. No one likes rate increases, and I'm affected by that too, but I do think that Julie brought up a really good suggestion, because I was really, like I said, I was really coming in here thinking that I was going to say, let's put this off until we can get a better idea, arms around this redundancy project. I don't know if we have that luxury anymore, but I think the suggestion of if you're going to accept it, then maybe we implement it after, at the start of our next fiscal year, which would be July 1st, 2016, that makes a lot of sense to me. And so I think if we're going to move in this direction, I'd be comfortable with that. So those are my comments, and what's the pleasure of the board?
I have another question, if that would be
yes.
All right.
You certainly may.
Since there's great concern around the discharge requirements, would it make any difference if that plant stopped accepting outside disposal, such as other companies, brine and other things that are disposed of at the sanitation district? Would it make any difference to the discharge requirements? It wouldn't. Okay. Thank you.
No, but it does reduce our cost of doing business by having those entities pay for some of the paid a discharge there. As far as delaying until the fiscal year, I don't really have a major objection to that. I do note that the overall cost projection in 2005 was $9 million, and 11 years later it's up to $19 million. And as the clock ticks, hopefully we'll be able to proceed with this project in a very timely manner, although I have some concerns that I want to make sure that we have the permits in hand pretty much before jumping on, with both feet into something. So I think that can be accommodated if we wait until the fiscal year to implement that. So I'm probably neutral on that, so I don't object to it.
Okay. So I think at this point, does someone want to try a motion, or do we want to table this discussion?
I would move that we adopt the ordinance 2016 number to be the next sequential ordinance number of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. An ordinance of the Board of Directors of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District increasing charges for wastewater treatment service and facilities as outlined in the report.
Would you be open to a friendly amendment that talks about the date of implementation?
The date of implementation to be the beginning of the coming fiscal year.
With that amendment, I will second your motion. Any additional discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Over here. If the board is inclined to support that motion, there's an ordinance before the board that's a little bit different than that. And if we could take a short recess, perhaps I could speak with Mr. Handlers to accommodate the board's revision request.
Okay. So what do you need, 5, 10 minutes?
5 minutes.
Okay. We'll take a 5-minute recess.
Thank you.
Protesters at this evening's hearing, please.
We have a total of 22 protests. We had 17 protests submitted by mail, and five protests actively at the meeting, five in person.
Total again was?
Sorry. Total is 22.
Okay. And Ms. Stockton, can you convey Mr. Handler's information regarding what it takes to protest?
Thank you, Mr. Scholz. I asked Mr. Handlers to assist us in calculating what a majority protest would be. From a very conservative standpoint, that is to give us the smallest possible number of parcels that would constitute a majority so that we could be sure that we took as few protests as possible in case people wanted to protest. By Mr. Handler's calculation, there are 6,419 parcels in Arroyo Grande, 1,793 parcels in Oceano, 4,320 parcels in Grover Beach, for a total of 12,533 parcels. So a majority protest would be 12,534. Thank you.
Very good. And then could you also, I know that there is a motion and a second on the floor, and I believe you had talked about the ordinance under consideration. So
yes.
Could you read into the record what changes would need to occur with that ordinance under that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Scholz. And for those of you who are looking at your board packet, this would be on page 3 of the item actually page 3 of the ordinance of the item that we're on right now, Proposition 218 hearing. Excuse my P's in the microphone. On page 3, there's a chart that says wastewater treatment rates. In order to do what the board has been talking about and the motion on the floor, that first column that's called March 1st, 2016 would be completely crossed out of the ordinance. And the effect of that, according to Mr. Handler's, would be that those service charges for July 1st, 2016 and continuing on in succeeding years would be the rates, and no rate increase would be implemented until July 1st, 2016.
If I might make a comment, if we have 12,533 parcels in the district, a majority protest would constitute 6,268 by my...
And this is why I never do math, and so I accept your... definitely your math, and your math is correct. I hope that the minutes will reflect the correct math instead of the Wendy math.
Okay, Mr. Quality Control. I think we have a motion and a second, and so I think at this time I'm going to call for a roll call.
Director Lucy?
No.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Okay, we are going to move on to item 6B, and this is selection of design engineering firm for wastewater treatment facility redundancy project and approval of contract. Mr. Clemens.
Yes, sir. Chairman Schultz and Honorable Board. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors issue a notice of award to Kennedy Jinks Consultants and authorize the interim district administrator to execute the attached contract for design of the wastewater treatment facility redundancy project. I have to apologize. We didn't get the contract on the posted board pack, but the board does have a copy of the contract. And I believe we have one over here available for anyone in the public who might want to see it. At the November 18th regular meeting, the board approved the issuance of request for qualifications for the engineering and design services for the redundancy project. The primary objective, as stated earlier in this meeting, is to allow a single biological treatment unit, our fixed film reactor and secondary clarifier to be taken out of service while allowing the district to continue to meet the discharge requirements. In order to do that, we need a redundant process. In this case, we're considering an aeration basin secondary clarifier. On January 6th, the board approved the contract with John Rickenbach Consulting for completion of coastal development permit and California Environmental Quality Act documentation. This effort is necessary to receive approvals for construction of the redundancy project. We want to get ahead of that so that we can address permitting issues and before we get too far into the project in case they go south on us. The district issued the RFQ on November 20th. The mandatory meeting was held on December 8th for prospective proposers and was attended by representatives from AECOM engineers, from Corolo engineers, from Kennedy Jinks engineers, Yee and Associate engineers, and Cannon Corp engineers. Two consultants teams submitted statements of qualifications on January 15th, Kennedy Jinks and Corolo Engineering. Based on the qualifications of both proposed teams and adherence to the, both of the submittals of qualifications to the request for qualifications requirements, an evaluation team of myself, Jim Gehring of Gehring Taylor and Associates, and Mike Nunley of Mike Nunley and Associates. We conducted an interview on February 3rd, 2016. As described in the request for qualification, both the written SOQs and the interviews were evaluated according to the following criteria. Quality and clarity of the submittal qualifications and understanding of the work. Experience of the firm's project manager and key team members together on similar projects. The firm's history of design projects with minimal construction change orders, and then experience designing wastewater treatment improvements in the coastal zone with the similar site constraints. Both firms presented qualified teams and comprehensive project approach. Kennedy Jinks Consulting was ranked highest by the interviewers or by the interview team because of their experience with past successful projects at the wastewater treatment plant, the experience of their project team together on similar projects, and their experience in designing wastewater treatment improvements within the coastal zone. The Kenny Jenks consultant team has included the Cannon Corporation for surveying, civil engineering, and flood mitigation design support, ESA for coastal planning and engineering expertise, Don Cortinovis, PE on operations consultant. ESA was proposed to provide support for coastal and flood control issues and also for as-needed services to the district to respond to permitting agency requests. I want to note that ESA is as needed specifically because we've already retained John Rickenbach for our permitting issues. If we get to a point where there needs to be more support, then at that point ESA will begin to participate in the project. But again, that's as needed. If they're not needed, we may not use them at all. A scope and budget were negotiated with Kennedy James Consultant for consideration by the district board. The proposed budget is $1.837 million, including $30,000 for as-needed permitting support and $50,000 for as-needed construction and startup support, which is within the total engineering design budget of $1.87 million from the September 2015 work plan. If the board approves the issuance of notice of award to Kenny Jinks as well as execution of the attached agreement, the next stage of the redundancy project will follow the schedule below as presented in RFQ. We would issue a notice to proceed on March 3rd. Initial feedback from the Coastal Commission is expected on June 30th. And if everything goes well, we would expect our final design documents and permit issue no later than June 30th, 2017. Construction bidding will begin sometime during the summer of 2017. And again, if everything's going well, then construction will begin, would start in the fall of 2017 and be completed in the fall of 2019. So we're asking the board to issue, given our interview process, to issue a award to notice of award to Kitty Jinks Consultants. So.
Thank you, John. Mary, you have any questions?
Yeah, I do have some questions. you'd mentioned that four people attended the bidders conference and two people submitted.
Five
attended?
Yeah, five attended.
Okay, and then two went on to submit. At the last meeting when the contract for, I think it was HC Construction, was made, there was a request from the board that all bids be included to the board upon approving any more contracts. And so I don't see the second bid. I only see the one that you have here for Kennedy Jinks.
There was no bid. There were submittals of qualifications. I still have those. If the board would like to see those, we can.
Yeah, I think it's really very important that the board see the whole process to see who applied, who didn't, and your comments on reviewing. And I thought, really, watching the meeting live on TV, I thought that everybody was on board that, yes, all bids would be submitted when the board considered the contract. And it's actually pretty clear in the minutes.
So you said there were two that submitted just a SOQ?
Yeah, submission to qualifications.
Okay. And do you have the other one here? Or
I don't believe I brought that. When we said bids, I was thinking in terms of money. You know, when typically bids have to do with money, this was a submittal of qualifications. So that's where I tripped up on it.
Okay. Thank you, John. Barry, you have any other questions?
So I guess you're going to ignore what you voted on last time, or how are we going to move forward? Because I really do like to follow policies and procedures, and if the board says that in order to allocate any funds or resources, that we see everybody who applied, whether it was a letter of qualification, whether it was a full-on, you know, however, it was reviewed as a contract because there is $1.8 million plus attached to it.
So hold on. So you've asked the question. He's tried to answer it. I see.
No, I accept his answer.
Okay, so then I think we have questions, and there's a process we need to go to. We're not going to just stop and say we're done with this item. So
no, I'm just asking you how you want me to move forward as well.
Yeah, I didn't know if – okay, I just want to know if you had any other questions because I think that was a good observation. So we'll have that conversation. So any other questions? You're just in that or no? Okay. Jim, you have any questions?
Yes, I do. First, I note that this is not a bid process. It's a review of qualifications, and the board was presented with the qualification documents that were submitted. The ESA, being a consultant for coastal planning and permitting, I do note that we have the contract with, I believe it's through Mr. Nunley's offices, with John Rickenback to, and my notes go back to our meeting of December 16th, when I believe we engaged Mr. Rickenback to obtain the permits from the Coastal Commission and county as necessary. And that proposal indicated that the coastal development permit would take 2 to 6 months, and within 2 months of submittal, we would expect initial feedback from the Coastal Commission. And I'm wondering where we're at in that, and whether we have indeed submitted the coastal development permit application, because I think we indicated that was something we wanted to begin as soon as possible. So it having been 2 months approximately, if I have my calendar correct, I would expect some kind of a preliminary report on where we're at with a permit, because I think that's some key information going forward. So I guess I need to know where we're at with permitting.
Okay. So, you wanted consultants when I respond to that question, please?
Yeah. We have Mike Nunley here.
Thank you. So we'd like to give you a quick update on permitting. So Mr. Rickenbach's contract was approved on January 6th for preparation of the coastal development permit application, and also development of a mitigated negative declaration for CEQA compliance. So we're on track to submit the CDP application by the end of this week. So we should be in good shape for that. We've been requesting some information and sharing some things back and forth with district staff. So we should be on track for that. One of the things I want to point out, too, is that the way that if you look at the schedule that is being proposed as part of this contract, one of the things that we made clear to the potential proposers was that we didn't want them to spend a bunch of money until towards the end of June. And the reason for that is just as you all stated during discussion of a previous item, you don't want this thing designed and then Coastal Commission come back and say they have a big issue. So the way that the schedule's laid out from Kennedy Jenks and the way the proposal's laid out is their plan is to do some of the relatively low-cost initial study items that may be needed for responding to comments or questions during permitting anyway. So the things they would do would be the site survey the first few months. So they would do the geotechnical report, and then they move into looking at some of the pipeline condition in some of the areas that we'd be tying in. And so you'll see there are a handful of those items their development of their concept design report doesn't truly begin until right around that June time frame. And the purpose of that is to allow some time for some discourse and response back from Coastal Commission before they dive into the detailed design. So that's something we made really clear with the proposers up front, is the district wants to minimize their risk while keeping the project moving as best they can.
And then the actual design work wouldn't start until we had the permit in hand.
That's correct. So one of the things that we felt like we needed and we've discussed before is this concept of the design and the permitting, at least having the design engineer on board now, so that as questions come up from Coastal Commission, and there may be things that have to come back to the board for consideration. There may be cost implications or cost alternatives. It's my opinion is you want the same design engineer that's going to be responsible for designing those facilities available to respond to those things as they come up early during the process. And having your design and your permitting run concurrent is something that's commonly done on these major projects for that very reason, because you don't want to get a set of answers from one designer, move into the, you know, wait 3 or 4 months and get another designer on board and get a whole different set of, or duplicate efforts in those cases.
I'm certainly aligned with the wisdom of having early site work done, but what I would find even more distressing is to pay for a design that can't be permitted.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And just to tag onto that, then, just how much information do you need to submit for the CDP?
So the studies that Kennedy Jenks has done in the past with site plans, sizes of structures, in our opinion, is adequate to get that application together for the CDP. So the amount of information they need to provide us to get the CDP package in is really minimal. A lot of these things have been done in these preliminary reports up till now. So you've got a lot of good information to build from. Now, as questions come back or things, we need to look into flood issues and that sort of thing, we want to wait for specific direction from Coastal so we answer their exact question. But we have a lot of good information to start to at least get the application in and start the discussion process.
Okay, and then you're saying you're looking at a submitted application this week.
Yes, sir.
But then you're talking about initial feedback from Coastal Commission. So how often is Mr. Rickenbach in communications with Coastal staff?
So he has been talking with them every couple of weeks just to respond, just to clarify some questions, make sure we're getting the information together properly. And the plan, when we say June, we're trying to build some conservatism in, because initially when you submit your application, I'm not the planner, but I'll take a shot at it based on what we discussed in the past with John Rickenbach. But you submit your application and you're obligated to have a response in 30 days. So that's your first chance to see how your application is considered. So the thought is we submit the end of this week. 30 days puts us to, say, third week of March. When we look at the June time frame, that should give us plenty of time for good discourse back and forth with Coastal Commission. We should have a very good idea what conditions might be, and then those can be fleshed out with the design team over that next year.
Okay, and then clarify for me, because as I look at the staff report, and it talks about final design documents and permit issuance in June 2017, and I applaud that you had made it clear to folks that we don't want to expend $1.8 million up front to
right.
We have a plan or a design that can be permitted. And I haven't really had a chance to look at this agreement tonight. Is there anything built in this agreement that gives us some protections, or is that just going on someone's word? So I don't know if there's a time frame in here with dates and milestones that talk about payment points and things of that nature.
Yes, sir. So the way the contract is set up, they do have a schedule that becomes part of this agreement, and that is this schedule with dates, et cetera. So they're going to submit progress pay requests to the district, and each month that'll be your chance to look and say, hey, you guys worked too far ahead, and your chance to determine whether you're going to approve those or not. Now, you know, my anticipation would be that at the kickoff meeting that that Mr. Clemens and Mr. Wyckoff and Kennedy Jenks would probably sit down and iron out what's appropriate to do the first 3 months and what isn't. But we do have a schedule here that says what they'll be working on and what they won't.
Okay. And I think Jim had asked my other two questions. So with that, let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone who'd like to address the item before the board.
I'll have some other either questions or comments as we go forward.
Okay, very good.
I'm sorry, I forget the gentleman's name who was just speaking, but I clearly remember before that contract was signed on January 6th, and they were looking to get this bid, they had said they were already in contact with the Coastal Commission. So it would seem like we would hear something, anything at this point from them. And then, John, I just got to say, you just said something that set alarm bells off with me. You said that you had not had a chance to look at that whole packet.
No, not the whole packet, the agreement that staff...
The whole agreement.
That's right.
I guess we're going to be voting on that tonight. So
I'm going to let you finish your comments. Okay.
If I am understanding it right, that just kind of scares me. That I would like to know that, you've checked the I's and crossed the T's before we're going to vote on something after all of this district's been through, and that's it. Thank you.
Those are excellent comments.
Debbie Peterson, Grover Beach, and I just would like to know if you have your CAD drawings back from Wallace, if you've received everything back now, if you have the reports for the potholing from the previous time.
Debbie, are you...
Sorry, am I on the wrong... Am I premature? Excuse me. Okay. Okay, I'll come back on the other one. I can't remember if this is sea level rise one or not, so I'll come back again. Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Peterson's right. I'm Julie Tacker, and what she's referring to is that voluminous record that had the soil hasn't changed, the site hasn't changed, all that information that has been generated by Kennedy Jenks, by Wallace, by any other engineering firm, it's in a library somewhere. It may be disheveled, but you own it. And that's what bothers me about the Kennedy Jenks proposal. I think the ESA component is what's got me with the most heartburn, in that it is a almost 100% contingency for Rickenbach. Rickenbach was sole sourced, was $32,000. The ESA component is $30,000 for permit support. I've been in contact with the Coastal Commission. I've done a public records request for all the correspondence between Mr. Rickenbach and Coastal staff. It's very thin because a lot of it's been done by telephone. I think you should be doing things in writing so that you have a record. Something that came from Coastal was a statement that ESA is going to be doing the soils, the flood, and tsunami analysis. Well, you haven't hired ESA. That's rather presumptuous of ESA and Kennedy Jenks to suggest to Coastal that they, or whether that, I don't know how they got that information unless it came from Nunley, Rickenbach, Kennedy Jenks, or ESA themselves. I don't know how Coastal got that information that ESA is going to be doing this preliminary work before you hired them. Doesn't sit right with me. I don't like that. If Rickenbach needed support, I think that should have been part of his disclosure when you hired him, is that I'm going to need this other backup work. But it seems to me that soils, flood, and tsunami analysis, the place flooded. on December 19th, 2010. There's no doubt that there's a flood potential. You have tsunami run-up maps. Mr. Rickenbach or Mr. Nunley showed them in his PowerPoint on December 16th. And that's what I think is also sticking in my craw, is that his 90-day PowerPoint shows that there would be submit application and receive initial response within 30 days. That was December 16th. Prepare permitting plan by February. We're in the middle of February. So receive statements of qualifications for firms by January 15th. Authorize design consultant in March. That's next month. And here you're doing it, perhaps doing it tonight. So we're not sticking to a timeline. I'm concerned that consultants are taking advantage of your vulnerability in that you do not have a permanent general manager who really could be looking at the timeline and overseeing how things are implemented, could be digging in the boxes and finding previous soils analysis, flood and tsunami analysis, because you have done projects at that site. And they were permitted by Coastal and County. So I don't want to see you pay ESA to double the work or double work that's been done in the past. And I guess in my mind, when Mr. Clemens backed up the idea that you would sole source to Rickenbach with a comment that he had called Kennedy Jenks and gotten their endorsement, but they're not hiring Rickenbach. They're hiring as ESA. And I think you could have had one environmental consultant, and perhaps it would have been ESA. So I think the cart is before the horse tonight. I think you can wait and dig around in the records and see what documents you already own and how staff can support the permitting process without engaging in a $1.8 million contract. Whatever's incremental up until then could be done in incremental, smaller contracts before you bite the big apple here. I really do think the timeline is just fishy. It's just fishy, and I'm sorry that it's like this right now, and I hope you can rectify it or somehow fix it.
Thank you. Debbie, you come back. Sorry.
Thank you. So Julie said most of it, but here's my concern. If there are still CAD drawings, if there's still information on potholing, that record is very important record. You can look at whether or not the droughts affected things. You can possibly do some gauging on sea level rise. And so I think I know you had directed staff to write to, or it had been recommended. You adopted all of those things that were suggested by our auditor. So I think it's really important that you do get that information back, and so that you can have a long-term record of what's happening geotechnically. And wanted to mention that I went along to a sediment study workshop that's being worked on by the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and they mentioned that they're anticipating, and they have already seen some sea level rise of 10 feet in the next, by 2100. And we're already flooding here in Oceano. So I'm just thinking that is something that needs to be carefully looked at and evaluated also.
Is there anyone else? Okay, let me close it and bring it back to the board. And just for a clarification, I've read the packet. There was an agreement in here, but I believe Mr. Clemens passed out an agreement when we got here this evening, correct? Okay. So let's see. I know Mary had raised a question or concern, but Jim, you said you had more questions, correct?
I have a few just for clarification. Potholing is something that I don't think we can go into old records because that would determine that what the current condition of the pipe is. So it's obviously important to know the current condition of the pipe when you're going to tap into that pipe. But in the condition assessment, this is the district will pothole the piping, and the consultant, which is Kennedy Jenks, would observe and take measurements. So my question then is the staff prepared to do the potholing? Because that's left to the district and is outside the scope of the contract. They talk about manned internal inspection of the pipeline. I'm not sure how feasible that would be. They do list video technology or potentially other means of internal inspection. That's probably what we would be looking at. But again, internal inspection is not currently budgeted. So that's, I'm just pointing this out as things that are not included in the contract. The district's going to have to pothole the pipe, and we're going to come up with internal inspection if necessary. I see that part of the scope of work is a review of applicable building codes and standards for new facilities. I would expect the consultant to be intimately familiar with such without having to conduct much of a review. Provide strategy for integration of the plant's proposed cogen facilities, power quality issues, optional, see, there's alternatives for future production of recycled water. I don't believe that we're, this is, it's an optional task not included in the requested budget, but I believe that's something that we do not want to engage at this point. Flood-proofing measures for both existing facilities and redundancy project components. Some of the speakers have brought up the potential that we have flood-proofing measures perhaps already designed for existing facilities. We may not have the reports and drawings related to that. Preliminary project schedule. This is task 1.8. I believe Mr. Nunley's organization has provided that, if I'm not mistaken. As needed support for CEQA and permits. Again, I believe we've engaged Mr. Rickenback to provide the CEQA documentation and the permits. Conduct a bidability review focused on the clarity of the construction documents. Yeah, I would hope so. Hopefully the internal quality control of the vendor would assure that the project is biddable and similarly is constructible. Develop a QA/QC plan. I would think that that's probably an off-the-shelf product. Project decision logs made available to the district via the web. I think probably a formal submittal would be more appropriate. Task 7.4 talks about submittal reviews. They would advocate that the PUD receives a level of quality This is not a PUD. It's a sanitation district. Site visits. Task includes effort for the consultant to visit the site to review work, perform inspection, coordinate. 12 site visits are budgeted for the consultant, project manager, or other design leads. So that's for a two-year project, that's one visit every other month. And I'm hoping that that doesn't, I guess this is basically for design. So that's possibly adequate. Hopefully QC will be engaged there also. Task 7.7, record drawings. I need to see that all drawings are property of the district, which is not so stated. Other as-needed services. Prepare an O&M manual. Yes, we want that. All vendor O&M manuals also would become property of the district. Repeats the idea that the district staff is going to do the potholing. The district or others will provide construction management services. I guess we'll need to know who's going to do that eventually. Again, this is basically for design, as I understand it. Construction correspondence for the purposes of determining compliance with technical and functional provisions of construction contract documents only. I'm wondering who all is going to be involved in that. The district or its construction manager will take a minimum of 20 digital project photos per day. Is this, again, related to the design of the project? Or is that during site visits, potholing? I'm just wondering what the scope of 20 digital photos per day, if this is for design and not construction. Again, the district or its construction manager will track progress. Districts or in its construction manager will receive, review, and provide comments on construction administration submittals. District or its documents administrator, not sure who that is, will transmit all project correspondence. District will review and tabulate contractor bids, check that the bids are complete and responsive. We probably need to identify who that is, if it's Mr. Nunley's organization or who. District will take electrical measurements. Again, that's something that may fall on staff, so I'm just wanting to make sure that we can provide all of the things that are not included in these bids. One thing that they talk about, 11 by 17 signed and sealed drawing sets. One requirement I would insist on is all drawings should be fully legible. reproduction and advertising costs would be covered by the district or others. I would think that that would exclude providing those copies of legible design drawings. An investment grade energy review audit, if required, again, will be provided and coordinated by the district. I don't know if staff is prepared to do that or we would have to contract such if necessary. The project is budgeted on a T&M basis. Hopefully it's a project basis not to exceed. And then a property boundary survey is not included in this proposal. They talk about checking a title and so forth to the property, which is interesting. Consultant will utilize previous geotechnical and survey work. Yes, I endorse that. And then to kind of underscore my comment about legibility, this chart on the back is completely unreadable. So those are just, you know, questions that come up relating to little details that I saw in the contract that are assigning things to the district to do and provide that we need to be aware of, and either staff would have to do those or we would have to contract elsewhere.
Okay. So hopefully staff, you guys are taking copious notes. My suggestion is that we continue this item to either March 2nd or 16th. Clearly, and that basically, I think, Mary, you brought up a good point. I don't want to get into the semantics of whether it's a bid or it's an SOQ. There was a request, so that would allow staff just to bring the other SOQ so we can be responsive. You know, more time to read through this. And I'd also, as a person who used to, is a planner, who've talked to Coastal Commission, know Mr. Dan Carl very well. I'd be willing to offer my time to go with Mr. Ruckenbach and have a heart-to-heart with the Coastal Commission staff of Santa Cruz. So I don't know where the rest of you are on this. I think that it's getting late. We have other items. So what do you guys want to do?
Well, I don't want any of my comments to even remotely suggest that I have any issue with Kennedy Jenks and their proposal. I agree that they are very well qualified. I just want to make sure that we understand fully what the district is going to be engaged in, vice what the contractor is going to provide in terms of the scope of services. So
yeah.
I would agree with postponing a meeting to fully comprehend that.
So, John, do you think what comments and questions you've heard here, would March 2nd be appropriate or maybe March 16th? That gives us a full 4 weeks to look into some of the other items that were brought up tonight.
If the board wishes, we can bring it back March 2nd. I didn't hear anything tonight that was particularly confusing. So March 2nd or 16th at the board's leisure.
Okay. Mary?
First of all, I want to say I want to appreciate Mr. Hilsum. Expertise in this area. It really does help a lot of people. I would ask that when it be brought back, that it be brought back in a font that is large enough for people to read. This is actually some exceptionally hard.
What are you referring to? You're referring to
the sheet that I can't read.
Yeah, okay.
It's posted online. That's I apologize.
I understand that. It. Have the floor,
okay,
sir.
John, it's okay.
So if we could get this, the font, just a little bit larger, I would greatly appreciate that. And I would support the other two board members. Keeping in mind, you know, yeah, I would support moving it to the 16th. Because I, too, am concerned about the permits and having a better chance at looking at the plan itself.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I move that we table the professional agreement.
and that's
Kennedy
until...
Would that be like Kennedy Jinx?
Yes.
I move that we table the agreement with Kennedy Jinx till March 16th.
Is that sufficient time for staff to answer all the...
Yes, sir.
Okay, then I would second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second on the floor, and since there's no resolution, we can do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. I am going to take at least a five-minute break. I didn't...
Oh, please don't run.
we're good? Okay. We can read the meeting, and we had just concluded with item 6B. We're going to go into item 6C, which is a chlorine control system replacement. Mr. Clemens.
Yes, sir. Staff has recommended that the Board of Directors authorize the interim district administrator to execute an attached contract with Canon Corp. Engineering Consultants for design and installation of chemical feed control system for the chlorine contact chamber at the wastewater treatment plant. Way of background, the chlorine sodium bisulfide feed control system, which is currently being used at the wastewater treatment plant chlorine contact chamber, is no longer supported by the manufacturer. There's no way to acquire replacement parts for this equipment, and the designer no longer offers any technical support for this system. Staff asked four qualified vendors for quotes to replace existing systems. Of the four vendors, there were two solicited. Tesco and Canon Engineering responded with proposals. Each vendor visited a wastewater treatment plant to review our current control system. Canon provided the lowest quote that meets the requirements of this project. Funds for this project will come from replacement fund 268065, structure to ground replacement and improvement. The fund has available balance of $512,000. So.
Thank you, John. Any questions of staff? Jim?
And this is for a not to exceed cost of $35,270?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, who was the original designer? Do we know that?
Yeah, it was Siemens and then Strentrol.
That's interesting that they no longer support it. Is any of the electrical conduit related to this project underground, do you know?
Yes, sir. It's a good portion of it is.
Are we confident in the quality of the conduit, like we don't have water in it, for example, that might cause us problems with the electrical?
Well,
are they going to look into that?
No, we're fine. Just last year we had our electrician who was on staff then run some extra wire through that conduit just for this type of situation. So we actually have unused twisted pairs that were just laid within the last year for that.
And we know there's not water intrusion into the conduit.
We just to finish answering that, a lot of our electrical is actually underwater. Our electrical boxes actually have valves, if you will, opening so that the water can travel in and back out because of where we are. There's no way to prevent intrusion, so our boxes are actually designed to let water in and out of the boxes, some of them.
Thank you for that. No other questions.
Okay, Mary, any questions?
What was the name of the other company who submitted a proposal?
It's in the package.
It is. Can you... Tesco? Mm-hmm.
Next to last page.
Okay.
on it.
Great. And then I have one other simple question. Is there going to be any subcontractors on this project?
No.
None? Okay. That's all I have.
Okay, very good. I don't have any questions. So let me open this up. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this item before the board? Seeing no one come forward or bring it back, and is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll move that the Board of Directors authorize interim district administrator to execute the provided contract with Canon Corp Engineering Consultants for the design and installation of the chemical feed control system for the chlorine contact chamber.
Second. Okay, there's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Director Loosley?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. Thank you, John. Motion carries. Let's move on to miscellaneous items. And the first that we'll take is, does anyone have any oral communications? Staff?
No.
No oral communications? Any board members? Okay. Anyone have any written communications? We haven't received any? No?
I'm kind of Julie Tacker again. I'm curious. I understand there was a Knutson addendum, so perhaps that will be on a future agenda, and maybe something, some kind of correspondence out of Oceano I'm not entirely familiar with, but both should be on future agendas.
Okay. How about a verbal report by the interim district administrator?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to point out that on our site, and I'm still managing it when I get time, I've placed a short video on there of plant operations. It's in the document section, and it's in the, it's entitled Plant Overview, and it's just a two-minute shot of how the plant operates. I've already received some input on how we could make it even more enlightening for citizens to look at, but I think it's a nice feature, and I think that we could start with that and add, and people can have a virtual viewpoint of how the plant operates. Also, in the way of coming agenda items, at the next board meeting, which is, I believe, on the 3rd of March. Okay. We expect to have the bylaws on that and discuss issues related to bylaws. I'm not sure if the board wanted us to bring this back, but we're almost prepared to send out billing to OCSD, mainly because we wanted to get it out before there were any changes in rates. And so we are, I'd say, 80% equipped and prepared to start our bill OCSD. We could possibly have them out before the next board meeting. And also at the next board meeting, we'll have a financial report. We didn't get our six-month report in yet. We've had a lot of things going. We're prepared to present that six-month report to the board at that time. And obviously on the 16th, I believe it is, we'll be coming, or the, it's the 3rd, that would be the 17th, we'll be coming back with, once everyone has an opportunity to look at the agreement and make any adjustments for engineering. Other than that, I don't have anything else.
Great, thank you, John. Ms. Stockton, can you cover the closed session items we have tonight?
Mr. Chair, the district is planning to hold a closed session for two items. One, a conference with legal counsel, existing litigation under paragraph 1 of subdivision D of Government Code section 54956.91 case, that case being South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus State Water Resources Control Board, Superior Court of Sacramento case number 34-2012-8000120 CU-WM GDS. In addition, item number two, a conference with legal counsel anticipated litigation under paragraph 2 of subdivision D of Government Code section 54956.91 case.
Great, thank you. Do any members of the public wish to address the any items on closed session?
Julie Tacker, the item number one, the district is continuing to litigate. What you're really doing is defending John Wallace. When are you going to stop that? This item number two appears that Mr. Wallace is threatening litigation on you. I say, bring it on. And then prepare the next agenda with initiation of litigation, and you sue Mr. Wallace. This is where I encourage you to get into the litigation business. And something that hasn't been discussed at the board level that was some other correspondence is the FEMA ineligible charges that Wallace was getting from the earthquake. Earthquake, right? Not the flood. No, the flood. Sorry. The flood of 2010. He billed FEMA for charges that were not eligible for pre-existing conditions. That's fraud. Mr. Guerrero was looking for fraud in the Knudsen report, and Knudsen couldn't go through everything, not every sheet of paper and every document. Some stuff had been destroyed. But that recent letter from FEMA spells out exactly what they don't cover, and pre-existing conditions at the district, trying to pay for them on the backs of the federal taxpayers, is fraud.
Is there anyone else?
I'd be more than happy to make a new sign every other week. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, we are going to recess in the closed session.